Obviously, you've gone into coaching yourself since you were playing, and I'll come to that later. But could we talk through the coaches you played under here in Gloucester and you know, go through their particular strengths and weaknesses and what you learned from them?
Yeah, I mean, got to remember them all now. Who did you have? You have Barry Corliss, obviously Richard Hill, Philip Saint-André, Viv Woolley, was another coach I was under. Keith Richardson. In fact, it was Keith who was coach when I first joined. And they all brought something to the party. You know, Keith was a very intellectual coach that used to like coming out with big words just to confuse you. And he still does now when I see his articles in the paper. But he had a very good take on the game and how it should be played, you know. And it wasn't with Keith; it wasn't always a case of just shove it up your jumper and play 10-man rugby. Viv Woolley came along, who was obviously an ex-Gloucester player, who was a very much more direct coach, you know. So you'd gone from a coach that wanted to play open rugby to then a coach that wanted to play very direct rugby. That was hard to adjust to start with, because again, whether you agreed with it or not, it wasn't your choice. You know, in effect, you were an employee, and if your boss tells you to play that type of rugby, that's what you do. You play that type of rugby, especially back in those were the amateur days. You know, I'm pleased to say in the professional days now is much more of a consultation, and the coaches tap in to the player's experience and to the player's knowledge and ask them, you know, what they think. Back then, and again, it might just be because I was a young kid, I was never asked how I thought the game should be played. I was just told how the game should be played. Barry Corliss, again, can't really remember that much about Barry's coaching techniques and stuff like that, really. Not to say that he wasn't a very good coach, just to say that I obviously didn't listen that much to Barry. I think out of all the coaches I had, I think Richard Hill was the coach that I certainly learnt the most from. You know, he was so dedicated and driven as a coach, and was able to get the best out of you as a player. Both talking to you, again, he would talk to you, not at you. And you knew from his playing days that he would give 100% in anything he'd done. You know, he tried, and he wasn't afraid to try things either. You know, I can remember we went through a spell when we had a psychologist come in. You know, we weren't having a great season, and then all of a sudden this psychologist used to come in before a game, and used to being away in a hotel. You'd have your pre-match meal, and then you'd have to have a team meeting. And this guy would get you to lay on the floor, and there'd be sounds of the sea crashing against the waves and all things like that. And you kind of laid there, and you think, "Not doing it for me, then." But you know, you went through it, and I'm sure for some players, you know, perhaps it worked. But certainly for the majority of the forwards that were trying to get themselves out for a battle, you know, being told to relax and, you know, imagine yourself floating off into the sea or something like that certainly didn't do it for us. But again, you know, and all credit to Richard, he would try those things, and you know, he would learn from them, and again, you know, he obviously taking that through to still being a very successful coach. But so much time for Richard Hill. He was a pleasure to be coached by. And then you had the other end of things with Philippe, the crazy Frenchman. You know, he was under, I was team manager when Philippe took over as coach. And people don't realise he was under a tremendous amount of pressure. You know, he'd literally gone from being a player to being in charge of Gloucester Rugby Club. You know, no, just because you're a great player doesn't make you a great coach, and you're going to make a lot of mistakes. And with the language barrier and the culture barrier as well, you know, do a lot of people inside, he was very, very frustrated. But, you know, the one thing you did know is that, you know, he was 100% behind the success of Gloucester Rugby Club. And I suspect if you were to talk to him now, he'd openly admit he made a lot of mistakes at Gloucester Rugby Club. But, you know, by making those mistakes, that's managed to get to where he is now, which is ultimately, you know, at the top of his tree, coaching France.
Yeah. It was interesting, actually, we spoke recently to Kent Nottage just before we left here, and he had an awful lot of time for the... frustrating in many ways.
Oh, extremely frustrating. Trust me, as a team manager, and, you know, again, it was quite... We were very similar. I had finished my playing career while under Philippe. It was Philippe and John Brain, actually, and I finished with knee injury. And then they gave me the opportunity to become team manager. So while at the same time Philippe had sort of like flipped from player to manager, I'd also had to flip from player to team manager. So it was a big learning curve for me. And yeah, I would say Ken's take on it with frustration would be very true. But again, one of Philippe's biggest assets were being able to identify players. You know, he brought players in that were, you know, unheard of really before they come to this club, that went on to be phenomenal. And, you know, he would always take that. He had an eye for the talent, and he wasn't afraid to bring in a complete unknown and bring him to Gloucester Rugby Club.
Through this period, of course, the management of the club
was
changing dramatically. Let's have your reflections on that.
When Tom first got involved in the club, that was the year I was captain, when he bought into the club. And again, from my perspective, it was just excitement. You know, there was all these rumours going along who was going to invest. Richard Branson was banded about, and other people were banded about. And all of a sudden, Tom Walkinshaw was banded about at the time. I'd never heard of Tom Walkinshaw, you know, didn't know who he was. And then, of course, you do your research and you find out about his rallying background, because that's where he originally started from, into his Formula One and his businesses. And, you know, Tom Walkinshaw done masses for this club, there's no doubt about it. He enabled this club to really go to professional levels on the pitch, and more importantly off the pitch. You know, I think that's the biggest thing he brought to this club. It is creating a commercial environment that enabled the club to be successful off the pitch as well as on the pitch. Now, from a sportsman at the time, do you pay a lot of interest in that? You don't really, because you're just worried about on the pitch. As a team manager, now as a businessman, you look back and you think, he kept that club going, and he dragged it into the 21st century with a business view on the club. You know, Gloucester's always been steeped in history and, you know, support. Has it always been commercially minded? Probably not. You know, but he did bring that commercial element to the club off the pitch, and, you know, that was all communicated through Ken Nottage, and, you know, this club wouldn't be where it is without Tom Walkinshaw. There's a lot of rumours, there's a lot of bad stuff said about Tom, but I live life, you speak how you find. And as a player, he would always talk to me. As a team manager, he would always talk to me. And even as a spectator, when I saw him up here, he would always take time and come over to talk to me. So, you know, I've had nothing but admiration for Tom.
And Ken Nottage, what role did Ken Nottage have in your view?
To me, Ken Nottage was the cornerstone of the club. You know, there's players come and go, you know, coaches come and go, but you always had an MD that was always there and was always at the forefront and was always had a door open that you could go and talk to, whether that be as a player, as a team manager, or again, as a businessman. Ken was very good at talking to the local businessmen and communicating with them. So, you know, I would really say there's a big gap to fill in Ken's absence, because you know, he has been that stability in the club for so long. You know, he has been that, you know, when things haven't looked right on the pitch, when things haven't looked right off the pitch, you know, Ken's had to stand up and be accountable for it, and had to put things in place which he hoped would put the situation right.